They did it in secret.
Right. That's what I wanted to know, is who had the power to do that. So we don't know who had the power then, do we?
Well, that would have been Bernanke and the other chairs of the Fed.
Right. Well, thank you. That's what I wanted to know.
Well, that's the ultimate top of the pyramid then. Well, now Bernanke's out, but it doesn't matter. Whoever the Fed chairman is, they always serve the same interest.
Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I enjoy you're a good host. Thank you, sir.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad he chose me. Rick in Arizona, thank you for waiting.
Ryan, yeah, I was wondering what kind of, you don't have to tell me, but what kind of a working background do you have? It sounds like you know a lot about finance.
You mean in economics? Well, actually, I went to the College of William & Mary, and I majored in history. But my family are mostly businessmen, and I'm pretty self-educated. I learned a lot, actually, more after college than in. And I got into economics. I guess Bill Still probably sparked my interest back when I was a teenager, and I just read a lot of books about it and studied it independently. But I've never worked for a financial institution or anything to do with Wall Street or anything like that. I did start buying stocks when I was 13. I wasn't allowed to legally own them until I was 18, but I was interested in blue chip and white chip stocks when I was a young kid. I guess I'm just a weird, nerdy kid, but that always fascinated me, and I've since sold them all off, and I don't participate in legalized gambling anymore. But I don't have any official credentials in finance, in the world of finance. I just am a nerdy person that reads a lot of books.
What's your attitude on the no plane theory for 9/11?
I think it's retarded, to be blunt.
Why do you think it's disinformation.
Because the planes were witnessed by half of New York City running into the buildings, and hundreds of people witnessed the plane hitting the Pentagon, and it's total disinformation. I mean, it makes a stigma about 9/11 truth, where people, prominent people with stuff to lose, don't want to talk about it because they don't want to be associated with lunatics. But we got the music coming. I'll address more of that when we get back, and I'm also going to get Renee and Scott after the break. Hey, we're back. This is the What Really Happened show. I'm Ryan Dawson, filling in for Mike Rivero. The number to call in is 800-313-9443. And I had a question about the no planes. I won't even call it a theory. I just call it a baloney on 9/11. And no, I don't give that any merit whatsoever. But I think the professionalism of that BS is such a high level that I really question where it's coming from. There were airplanes on 9/11. Jeremy Glick was in the judo circuit. I personally knew him. He did die. He was on Flight 93. Those people are gone. There were airplanes. It's especially the second plane hitting the World Trade Centers. Most of New York was watching the towers because there's smoke billowing out of the first one, and saw the airplane run into the tower. And just, you've got to be a little bit out of your mind to deny that. And in doing so, there's a lot of crazy stuff about 9/11, and it ranges in its degrees of stupidity. You have the really, really wild stuff with aliens and all the rest of that, and your futuristic space rays and dustification and all that. That's, you know, but not that many people pay attention to that junk. The real problem is the Jonestown stuff, which is like loose change, and it's denial of saying there's missiles and this and that, but they're a lot more deadly. I spent many years in my life making a film about 9/11, researching and put it out there, because I started with a homepage on AOL with like 12 readers. You know, I'm doing this show now, and I've been on television and such, but it didn't start that way. And, you know, I had to listen to these maniacs who already had a big microphone going off and doing all the silly stuff forever and claw my way up to be able to have a voice and make my own film about it to debunk this. And so I have people ask me all the time, you know, your guests you've had on, like Norman Finkelstein and Peter Schiff and Rockwell, do they ever tell you in private, like, what they think about 9/11? And I'll just say this. Whatever someone tells me in private is private. A lot of these people have careers and reputations, and speaking up on 9/11 will place you in a category of being a crazy person, and it's going to discredit every issue you've ever spoken about. That's just the reality of the situation, and the reason for that is thanks to the disinformation and sensationalism that selling shills like Alex Melonhead Jones and these other charlatans put out on the radio all the time. They're fear mongers, and they have polluted 9/11. They've poisoned 9/11 truth forever. That is the largest obstacle for why people who think privately will never say anything publicly about 9/11, because it probably won't do them much good, and it is going to do a lot of personal harm to them. And that's why I hammer, rather than they ignore the kooks and the truth movement. A lot of people say, leave them alone, just don't even say anything. But no, I will absolutely take you to the woodshed if you're going to deny planes or anything like that, because someone has to start pushing back on the crazies. This is, I've been screaming about 9/11 for 12 years, and the problem is Alex Jones. That is the number one obstacle standing in the way of truth. You got a bunch of crazies who've made it taboo. Just like they did the Tea Party and the Occupy movement, no one wants to be seen as a racist or a communist, and no one wants to be associated with a lunatic either, telling you that you know, your juice boxes make you gay, or your light bulbs are, you got Google flicker rates are going to control your mind, and there's a zillion different ways they're going to come kill you. Is that just that? If he would do the world a favor, he would just shut the hell up or just stop saying things that are absolutely crazy. And I have to deal with those lunatics all the time, and that's why I get real. I flip a switch when people start saying stuff like that, and because disinformation is killing the truth movement a lot more than the government's ridiculous story. And if I'm going to make a film with very factual, very verifiable explanation about what happened on 9/11, not some vague path to nowhere saying, oh, well, they did it, or the NWO or Illuminati or Bavarian death cults or the Jesuits, there's just some just stupid nonsense like that. I give you specific names, specific documents, who made out, who made what money, went over all the banking and background on the Silversteins and everything else, the Israelis caught on the bridge with a band full of bombs, and everyone focuses on the dancing Israelis. That is a fraction of the story of Israel's involvement in 9/11. And 2 days ago, I went over the anthrax story and walked through it already. And the films are up online. They're free. But I basically have to distribute them almost one-on-one to people, because if you go and Google anything about 9/11, you're going to run into the Jonestown dragnet and get sucked into a world of stupid, because there's just an infinite sea of dumb 9/11 theories that take you nowhere. They don't tell you what happened at all. All they tell you is what didn't happen, and fixate on, oh, Building 7 fell too fast. Well, whoopee-doo, yes, it did. You need to know a little bit more than that, a little bit more depth than the 9/11, than the buildings fell down too fast, if you're ever going to figure out who did it and why they did it, how it was connected to the war in Iraq, and the whole geopolitical strategy and what's been going on in the world. And I get sick to death of these charlatans that get up there like televangelists and sell their idiocy to suckers. Turn that stuff off. They just go ahead and graduate from it. Do not come in and call and ask about no planes unless you're ready for a beating for that. And I'll take the next caller, who is Renee from North Carolina. How are you? Renee?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hello.
There?
I'm here.
We're on the same page, because I'm about done with alternative media. Because it's so frustrating. I find a younger person like you refreshing. It needs new blood. You know, if we don't like them calling us names like conspiracy theorists, you know, how about all the political name-calling, calling people liberal commie, socialist and stuff? Is yep. that going to make some person who maybe was raised a Democrat want to listen to you? No, see, this kind of language divides.
It turns
okay?
them off
and,
right
and they
away.
Are actually they are actually helping to hold this in place, aiding the people who want to use divide and conquer. They are right here in this libertarian movement. You and
well,
they,
hey,
I know they
did
know
that. Didn't you know that Obama's a secret Muslim and he was born in Kenya?
I can't hardly take anymore. It's like
I
because,
understand it.
You know, the thing is, they do some of the very things they complain about, they turn around and do. They play the right-left paradigm like a fiddle.
Oh, yeah. Nobody is more dogmatic than some of these truthers. Nobody's
yeah,
more
so
dogmatic than this coming. No building ever fell from fire. They've got the lines all parroted, and I'm tired of it.
Well, that's just it. And they're all this political stuff with all them fighting about their isms, you know, is a diversion, because you know what? I can you can use anything for good or evil. You can use capitalism for evil, or you can use communism for good. It's like, so these people that get stuck in one or the other, and then they close their eyes. It's about, are you using, those are tools. Now, are you using that tool for good, or are you using it for evil? If this is about fraud,
they do that with religion and other things. It's like a car
across the board.
Right? It's like a car. The driver determines whether you run into people with it or stay on the road. It's not the vehicle. And any economic system has its ups and downs, but you can use, you can look throughout history of all different manner of, even there have been even benevolent monarchs. You can have any system. It's not a symptom of the system you have in place. It's the actual policies, individual policies that are implemented, and they can happen under a democracy or a dictatorship or fascism or anything, really.
Exactly. I agree exactly. And the thing is, actually, I think it's more accurate to call the problem we have right now fascism, and the powerful people in corporations and government uniting together against the people. But these people are continually going, oh, it's them liberal commie socialists. And I don't think that's the problem. But see, they, fascism tends to come from the right, and so they don't want to look at that because they're still carrying, a lot of them are still carrying so much Republican baggage with them, and they can't seem to give up these patterns of behavior.
Fascism's just socialism for the rich. You know, there's really no difference between socialism and fascism other than socialists assume that out of the government's own benevolence, they're going to redistribute money to the poor. And they don't. What happens is they redistribute money to themselves. And that is the flaw with it. And that can happen in any system. You see it in the so-called Democratic Republic of the United States, is one of the most fascist countries in the world. I mean, they just divvied out trillions of dollars.
Well, exactly. That's why these people get mad at poor people. Yeah, they throw some pennies at the poor people to shut them up. And they also, they're using the poor people as an excuse to take the money from you. And then they throw some pennies at the poor people, but they're pocketing the big
money
bucks
spent
for themselves.
Welfare on the poor is not even a fraction of a fraction compared to corporate welfare. I mean, it's not even on the map.
But that's not what they like to focus on, because they're bringing a lot of their old baggage with them. And the thing is, I'm really sick of all this diversion. Probably to me, and you tell me if you think I'm wrong, to me, one of the biggest problems we face is the legal and judicial branch of our government, because they're not doing their job, and they're
saying all these things are unconstitutional. You want to hold on through the break? I hear the music coming on. I'm glad a fellow Carolinian called in. Hold on, just through the next commercial. Nice jingle there. Renee, North Carolina, to address your question, absolutely, I think the judicial branch has fallen asleep at the wheel, and they're really not getting the flack that they deserve. We focus a lot more on the president and sometimes the Congress critters, but it's the judges especially, and one particular named Judge Boyle in North Carolina, Terrence Boyle, absolute neocon, and has destroyed where I used to live in the Outer Banks in Cape Hatteras. And they definitely need more of a spotlight shined on them.
Well, that's just it. And see, instead of always talking about liberal, commie, socialist, it's like, look, it is the falling down of law enforcement, all those regulating alphabet agencies, the lawyers, the judges, everything else. It is their dishonesty that allows all the other dishonesty. They're such cowards. They go around framing powerless people while the powerful people with selective prosecution, they do nothing about them. It is this branch, and I'm sorry, it's just this alternative radio is just, with all this diversion, is so ineffective, and we just keep going down this. I'm starting
It just about an hour ago, we were, myself and a caller were talking about how judges are vetted, how they are selected, and what they really do, and the involvements with, and yesterday we talked about the mob, and I'll talk about judges, and I talk about the president too, so there is new blood, and you know, alternative media, it's case by case, you know. I like Rivera, obviously I wouldn't sub for his show it otherwise. But, you know, it's there. There's independent media. I'm trying to build a new network myself. And I believe you might like my new book, which is coming. It'll be an ebook too. You can get a hold of it immediately in just probably 2 or 3 days. It's called Separation of Business and State. And in there, I think I cover a lot of what you're angry about, and I hope a lot of people read it, because that's really the crux of the issue. We have to separate business and state. And whether it's the left wing saying, oh, the corporations are bribing the government to do this and that, or the opposite saying, well, no, it's the corporation, the state control of corporations with force, it doesn't matter. It's the same result. And I show in that book, Separation of Church and State. I don't mean to be plugging it. I just don't know anyone else that's written anything like this. Exactly what we ought to be doing and where I think the focus has to be. And yeah, and I hope you don't give up on alternative media, because you certainly don't want the corporate media. Just find different people to listen to. You know, it's okay to shift around in it, but don't give up on us.
Well, you know, it's just that I think they need to somehow clean up their own act. The thing is, and
well, a lot of them, they're giving you a product instead of the news.
Huh?
They're not giving you the news. They're giving you a product. A lot of the so-called alternative media is just a bunch of salesmen for fear. And I don't like a lot of them either. But I'm not giving up on independent media.
Yeah, and the thing is, this is serious. People's lives are being destroyed on a daily basis by this. This is not without consequences. They somehow have to get their act together, quit going down so many rabbit trails, because when they do that, they're not the solution, they're the problem. Quit name-calling, and we need to focus like a laser on the areas who it would be most effective to go after, instead of splitting people between liberal
Absolutely.
And conservative.
Well, we're getting the old divide and conquer. It's a classic divide and conquer scam. You know, that's what
and
we're up to.
And they are doing it in alternative media. That's why I'm so frustrated.
Well, a lot of alternative media fosters that stuff. They get their little niche and say, I'll just say whatever I think is true. I don't care who I tick off or whatever. I mean, to me, the truth is the most important thing, and you can say whatever you want about me. It doesn't matter. It's about what's right, not who's right. And I really wish all this, you know, these little factions and stuff would grow up. I agree. But I got another caller, and I have 8 minutes to preface something.
Okay.
So thanks for your call, though. Scott, just hold on a little bit. I got to cram through. Well, no, I'll go ahead and get you now. You got to be quick, though. Wisconsin.
Well, Eric, I kind of disagree with that woman, first of all, because she's got a lot of, I'll just say that, there are good people on the independent, like you, that's a subtle guy, and Michael, and other guys. She's just got to open up her eyes and search for the right guys. Hey, Ryan, I just want to talk real quick. Let's concentrate on the Avalanche. AIG, how many times did they bail them out? Let's go tax Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, the federal boys. Wipe that out. Let's go then go do the housing swaps. Destroy that. How about go try the car swap? $8,000, bring your junker in for first-time buyer. Then go talk about the college loans.
How about the GM loan? They gave them $30 billion, and then they use the money to ship jobs to China.
Let me just go on, and then I'll get off here. College loans. Ryan, how much is that in the debt? Then you get down to the private insurance and attack and destroy that. And now they got it down to an individual person saying, you got to pay $350 a month for a family of five and then fork up $10,000 for the deductible if you have surgery. People across this country, here's the bottom line, Ryan. It's called the good Lord up above and his son against Satan. And if people don't start getting on their hands and knees, how can you stand up to walk, brother? Thanks for taking my call. God bless.
Right on, man. Okay, well, I have a guest for the third hour, and I wanted to preface something that some news in Japan, because we're going to be talking about the state secrecy law, but I wanted to see something that happened this morning in Japan time, and I just want to say this line, Naoki Inose, you failed this city. And that was the governor of Tokyo. He resigned this morning. Naoki Inose was involved in a loan scandal. We were just talking about this kind of thing. But he was involved in a loan scandal, so he resigned, saying that he lacked virtue. It's a very Japanese thing to say. He took 50 million yen bribe, loan, whatever you want to call it. It's a bribe, from a political family behind the medical group here in Japan. They're called the Tokushuka. And Tokushuka game this long before last year's gubernatorial election. And unlike in America, where, as I said, the head of the banking committee himself was involved in favoring financial institutions, that was Chris Dodd, and then he got cleared by the ethics committee by his buddies, Naoki faced 20 hours, actually over 20 hours of questioning by the General Affairs Committee, and then he resigned. Hopefully it won't affect the Olympics come to Tokyo, but, you know, I'm glad it's, but there's a panel now with the power to summon witnesses, which has been made to continue the investigation. So he's basically bribed off by this medical industry. One thing he could do is that he could approve opening new hospitals and things like that as governor, and so they basically purchased him. But he got caught. So I say one down, many more to go. At least the one of these. Japan has been creeping towards its old past of imperialism recently. And I wanted to talk more about that, but I have a guest who I believe is going to go over it with me. We'll probably segue from the secrecy law into what's been going on. But suffice to say, you've seen all this hype over the Sankaku Islands. They're rocks, really. It has nothing to do with the islands at all, but China and Japan are both claiming the territory is theirs. Presently, it is Japanese, but the government bought it from their private owners. The private owners were also Japanese. So in my opinion, they're Japanese islands. And you can say I live in Japan and I'm biased, but really, I don't have a stake in it. I don't care. It's 50-50, and I actually think they are Japan's. But that's neither here nor there, because what's happened is they used it as an excuse. They do this every year around December for China and Japan to start throwing spitballs at each other over this stupid dispute. And China's saying now that any aircraft, military aircraft, including American, that fly over this territory, they have to announce themselves that they're coming into Chinese territory, into Chinese airspace. They just arbitrarily increase their airspace to go over these hotly contested islands. Now, Japan doesn't do that either. They just leave it as neutral, even though they claim it as theirs. They wouldn't do that because it's going to tick off North and South Korea and Taiwan and everyone else. But China decided to do it. China does that for every island, even the Spratly Islands down in Malaysia. And that's because America's been surrounding them by bases and scaring the hell out of them. And so they're trying to stop this specific pivot, and this is one of their moves. And in doing so, they gave the Japanese, who've been getting increasingly more right-wing under Shinzo Abe, the pretext and excuse and clout to increase their military spending, and they say by 5%, but it's way more than that. That's to go up to 5% of their GDP. They've purchased all these Lockheed Martin and Boeing products. I'll talk more about it right after the break. We're going to have Kayleen Babcock on to talk about state secrecy. Here's your host, Ryan Dawson. I'm subbing for Mike Rivera today. My apologies to Dan and John and Alex. I know people don't like to hold through the commercials. I can't help commercials. It is a necessary evil, but before I bring my guest on today, I'll go ahead and get Wes in Idaho. Wes, are you there? You're on the air.
Ryan, thank you for taking my call. I agree. Truth is the most important thing. Now, you say you've done a lot of research on 911. Have you ever seen the website Hunt the Boeing and Test Your Perceptions? It's been around about 13 years. It's a series of colorful pictures just minutes after supposedly a Boeing airplane crashed yes. into the Pentagon?
Yes, I've seen it, and all the pictures are of only the second floor. I already debunked this yesterday. They have lovely, colorful photos of the 16-foot hole in the second floor, and then they go on and on about how a plane wouldn't fit in that hole. But they omitted the giant 100-foot hole in the first floor, which there are also pictures of, but not on that site. There were plane parts left into the building. The people on that plane died. There's hundreds of witnesses all over Northern Virginia. A plane hit the Pentagon. Hunt the Boeing is disinformation like loose change. It is just pure propaganda. Show me one picture that shows the first floor. They don't have any photos of the first floor on purpose because they are peddling disinformation. And what that does is discredits the entire subject of 9/11. Nobody can say anything about it because they don't want to be associated with people who are demonstrably and easily debunked and proven to look like lunatics.
There are witnesses saying that it was not a Boeing airplane. One witnessed on Dave Von Kleist's video.
I know. I've heard it all, and there are 140-some witnesses that saw the plane to the three that said they didn't, and one of them was married to an FBI agent, so I don't really take a lot of stock in that. Is there a Dan? I'm sorry, I've got to ask the control room something. Did Dan return? Okay. Well, I'm going to bring my guest on because we're going to talk about state secrecy law. I don't want to waste time arguing about planes on 9/11 because if that's not self-evident to you, you have problems. That's all I'm going to say about that. All right. So my guest today is Mr. Kalen Babcock. Are you on?
Hey, Ryan.
Oh, hey there. Hey, I want to talk to you today. Thanks for waking up early to do this. Kalen also lives
no
in Japan.
Problem.
Yeah, no problem. Well, for me, it's 4 to 6, so 4 to 7. But yeah, thank you for coming on. And I want to ask you about, we got to talk about journalism in Japan. I already covered it in Kenya and the United States earlier while you were sleeping about the creeping encroachment of state secrecy powers. And Japan recently passed a new law increasing the powers of the state and penalizing journalists, and it's the new Secrecy Act. But before that act even, could you touch on a little bit of how bad it already was before the new law for journalists in Japan? Because I've heard you talk about that before. I was hoping you could gloss over that first before we jump into this.
Sure. Okay, so Japan itself has a long history with not only problems between the government and the press, but even going further back, pre-World War II, they had what they called the Special Higher Police, which is the inspiration for George Orwell's 1984 Thought Police. And, past World War II, everything obviously started all over again. They had to start from scratch. And they came in with a new, constitution imposed on them by, the Allies. And they immediately, of course, tried to make it as Japanese as possible. But one of the things they did was creating, while they had freedom of speech built into their new constitution, they created what they call the Japanese Press Club. And you're talking about, a country that, while being 99% literate, and has one of the world's largest newspaper circulations, this is a really significant thing, because what the Press Club is it's basically an organization where it is quite literally a club. You would have rooms set aside within state buildings, within police buildings, and so on, where the press itself will go to be debriefed whenever news actually happens. So it's not easy to join. You have to have you have to be vouched for by two different people already in the club. And once you're in, per se, you have first access status. The problem is that there's 300 of them in the country. I mean, you can't join all of them. So
it's very reminiscent. It reminds me of when Bush was getting, or Ari Fleischer would handle questions for the president or Obama in the next administration. And it was all an in-house. They would call in journalists by their first names. And other than Helen Thomas, nobody ever asked them any real questions for either one of them.
Well, exactly. And the problem is that basically you're on standby, and it turns into a situation where you're really just rewriting press releases, handed down to you by the government. And there's all it's mixed up because obviously, being in public buildings as it is and yet not accessible to the public, you're basically talking about, tax money being used to pay for these things. But the public itself doesn't have access, and they either have to wait for the information to trickle down or it doesn't trickle down at all. And the worst part is that the press itself, you can be kicked out of the club per se. It's very unironic, a label. In the middle of covering, say, like a court case, which actually happened or has happened before, at which point, you lose access to that information.
Let me jump in with a little modern example. I didn't get into the story, but there's a big story in Japan now about Miss International taking on the mob act entertainment complex, and the story's up on Rhett Really Happened website right now. But
exactly,
Ikumi
yeah.
Yoshimatsu, that story, in as far as like in actual in the Japanese text, Japanese media in Japanese language, there were only two papers that really picked it up, and her blog has been read by over 1 million people on her personal site on the web.
And the problem
but is most of the papers didn't touch it.
Yeah, the five biggest papers didn't touch it because they were afraid of, you know, angering the very strong talent agencies in Japan, which is another problem entirely. You know, they basically are talking about...
We have to explain what a talent is. I mean, a lot of...
Yeah. Japanese celebrities... We in Japan, we have the old stable system of studio, which is Hollywood used to have it back in the 1950s.
It's like when the mob ran Marilyn Monroe and the rest of them in the 50s.
Exactly. And the idea is, like, you know, you've got somebody as famous as, say, like the Three Stooges is my favorite example, where they made all those wonderful movies that everybody still loves to this day, and they never made a dime off of it. All the money went to the studio, and they were on a... It's the way that the recording industry wishes they could run things, which they've tried to do, where they make the artist a hired service, a hired talent, but not the originator of their art. And that's the way the Japanese system runs. So they were the press didn't
they actually used the borrowed word talento for it.
Yeah, exactly.
Well.
Yeah,
they copied the system completely.
Exactly. Yeah. And they didn't want to touch this story because they were afraid of losing access to interviews with other celebrities. And I mean, it goes back to not only is it bad enough that, you know, she's a woman, but obviously she's bucking the system and going against these very powerful people. When you're talking about literally a handful of men in this talent agency who are at the top, who run the whole thing. So,
but they're very deeply involved with Inagawa Kai and Yamaguchi Gumi and the big crime syndicates.
Oh yeah, that's a matter of fact. This particular story was this woman basically saying, you know, a guy who jumps into the room and says, "I want you to work for me," and she's like, "I'm not going to work for you. You're part of the mafia, Yakuza."
Yakuza.
The beauty pageant.
Oh, we're gonna have to. We got the music coming up, but let's get into the mob story a little bit too after the break, and then more on what happens with this new law. And we're back. This is Ryan Dawson subbing for Mike Rivero. My guest today is Mr. Kalen Babcock. We're talking about state secrecy in Japan and the press club, and also a current scandal that has to do with a talent and the mafia. Welcome back, Kalen.
Hey, Ryan.
Hey there. I don't know if you caught earlier in the program, but we were talking about 9/11 as well, and I know you had family involved in that.
Yeah, actually, my mother was in Washington, D.C. on a business trip and was in a hotel a couple miles away from the Pentagon and heard it hit. As a result, she had to hitch a ride with a couple of guys all the way back to Oklahoma. So... yeah, that was definitely not a very pleasant experience. You know, very, very, you know, worried about my mother having to trek halfway across the United States to get home without a plane.
That was terrible. I think everybody remembers where they were on that day.
Yeah.
But, yeah, because we couldn't fly after all the planes were running the building. They shut everything down. But let's get back into the mob. And not that that's a better topic, but Miss Ikumi Yoshimoto.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just one fire into another, but this happened recently, so...
Well, it does come back to the... It does lead into the entire press issue, although, you know... Yeah, this is... wow, I mean, this touches on so many, you know, embedded problems that currently, you know, continue to exist in Japanese society.
Well, they're afraid to cover the story because they'll lose their privileges to interview talents for their entertainment
right.
news.
Yeah.
This should have been news, not entertainment news.
This woman, first of all, because, you know, I mean, she basically becomes Miss International and says, you know, I'm going to start my own talent agency. And it was a bizarre situation where she is at her current talent agency. And it basically thinks that they're going to be have a mutually agreeable exit where she's just going to go start her own. And during the meeting, this guy, Mr. Ishii, he's basically just, you know, jumps into the room. And says, this is a former K-1 fighter, by the way, Kazuyoshi Ishii.
He's a K-1 promoter.
And says, you need to sign on with me and go work with this guy, Taniguchi. And she's like, But I know you guys have, this affiliation with the Yakuza, and I'm doing my own thing. I'm good.
They were running a lot of that mixed martial arts stuff as well. That's why Pride got sold to the UFC, just saying.
Oh, really?
But,
yeah. And so she goes, I'm going to start my own company. I'm good. And she hires this international agent, Matt Taylor, and she says, I want you to be my international representative.
And he's an American guy.
Yeah. And suddenly, here she is on filming this special for New Year's, and she's finishing up, wrapping up the show, and this Taniguchi guy, comes into the set, and of course they're off the air. But he starts, shouting accusations and saying, "You owe me money. This Matt Taylor guy owes me money," and he's, basically literally tries to drag her out of the studio. Now, this is something that he later tries to deny. Unfortunately for him, he's in a TV studio and they've got, cameras and recording equipment. So there's quite a lot of evidence to support her claim that, he's harassing her. And right. he later, of course, absolutely tries to deny this, except for
he followed her with private detectives.
Yeah, he's following her. He's threatening that he's going to hire a locksmith to break into her family home to take the money by force, which, again, I mean, wow. This is the other problem.
This woman could not pass on her crown to the next Miss International. They told her to play sick.
We understand there's a problem, but we'd appreciate it if you didn't stand up for yourself. Let us handle this, which means basically they aren't going to handle it at all.
Yeah.
And
they wouldn't allow her on the show. Yeah.
So she ends up talking to a lawyer, and the lawyer says, tell you what, yeah, I believe you. This is a real problem. You really need to very carefully document this. I mean, stalking is becoming more and more of a very public issue in Japan. And the biggest problem being is that a lot of women, even after telling the police, are getting not just stalked, but I mean, there are people being murdered because of this problem. Mm-hmm. And so the lawyer's like, make sure you, cross your T's and dot your I's and get as much documentation as possible. And the best
explain a cultural thing here, too, with these talents and idols. Some of these girls are worshipped like gods, like you wouldn't believe. There's no comparison.
Guys do go, absolutely crazy for them. The worst thing a woman can do, of course, is have a boyfriend, heaven forbid, but anyway, the only coverage she could get originally was not a tabloid paper, but a weekly magazine, the Bunshun, who they published the details of this lawsuit and all of the documentation of this guy stalking her. And the rest of the media just was like, "Don't know what you're talking about."
Silence.
Yeah, silence. It's truly sad because, I mean, this is a situation where, bad players are continued to allowed to go about their business being bad. And this is truly cut and dried, black and white, good guy versus bad guy. And they're just like going, yeah, but, we really want to be able to, talk to Ken Watanabe. And literally, he's actually on the list of this talent agency of one of the people.
That's one of the actors from Batman
that they
Begins and Last Samurai.
Like, seriously? Yeah. And
he's
so,
Casey Honda.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know,
like, well,
yes, literally,
lady, you might get killed, but hey, Ken Watanabe.
But now, the First Lady's gotten involved. Shinzo Abe's wife is actually piped up in defense for Ikumi. So that's something, at least in the
excellent.
Right direction.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, when the Prime Minister's wife jumps in. And I think that is the good news is that this issue with stalking in Japan and women not being protected by the police and the invested, powers that be. It's nice to know that at least in this particular year, the winds are changing and blowing in the direction of a little bit of, taking care of business and making sure this kind of stuff doesn't continue. Because what it comes down to is, regardless of the talent agencies and the media issue, is that, people aren't really big fans of young women of any stripe. Again, like I said, bad players are being allowed to do whatever they want, and literally these young women are being harassed and in some cases murdered because,
pertinent,
like the press being worried about who they get to talk to. Seriously?
What's pertinent to point out is, although Shinzo Abe's wife has piped up about this, The Prime Minister himself hasn't said a thing, but if you know about Shinzo Abe, his grandfather was in the Mafia and actually was a liaison with the American CIA, and these are the kind of people that end up at the top echelons of the government.
Well, this is like the old... Yeah, we're in an age now where the government has become... I don't want to say ultra-conservative, but, you know, pretty much, you know, squarely set in the right-wing camp and very revisionist and basically, yeah, they would love to dial the clock back 50 years.
Actually, Abe just announced they're going to spend 24.7 trillion yen, which is about $240 billion over the next 5 years on U.S. war toys. I gave you a quick list. They got 3 drones, 52 amphibious vehicles. What the hell are they going to do with those? Invade China again? 17 tilt-rotor planes. That's the Osprey from Boeing. 5 submarines. That's fine. 2 destroyers with Aegis-y anti-missile systems. And then worst of all, this is definitely worst of all, 28 F-35 fighter jets. Those are $400 million apiece, and they don't even work. The arresting hook wasn't even built in the right place to land on anything. So the U.S. found a place to send them to.
I've heard about the F-35. It's a bit of a controversy. It's like, yeah, we built a plane that really doesn't serve any purpose.
The only worst is the F-22, but we got another break, and then now let's get into the secrecy law after the break.
Yeah, let's do that.
I'm Ryan Dawson. I'm filling in for Mike Rivero. My guest today is Mr. Babcock, and we're talking about state secrecy. And I'd like to also add, I used to work for Sybil Edmonds, the translator for the FBI. He was the first person in history to have the state secrets privilege enacted on her as a gag order to prevent her knowledge of what she found out post 9/11. And she has since set up a site called bullyingfrogspost.org, where you can also get nice daily news and a very interesting book, Classified Woman. And we had a lot of whistleblowers down there, Russ Tice. This is even before Snowden and Manning, who have been dropping the ball on the NSA and other things. And so this affects real people I've known. You can get jail time. You can get fined in the U.S. and Japan as they do for many things, following the worst things America does later on, and Japan ends up implementing the same type of policy. So, Mr. Kalin, what is the new secrecy law? What are the penalties? What's the worst part of this new law that Shinzo Abe is cramming through?
Okay, so this new law is fairly straightforward in that it basically allows any government official to designate any information, any aspect of the government and what it's doing to be a state secret. And it has general guidelines that basically say if it's related to national security, if it's related to nuclear power, which is, you know, kind of pertinent, information that could obviously theoretically be used by a terrorist or an enemy of the state to basically threaten, you know, Japan. But the problem is that the law is worded in such a way that, as I said, literally anything can be designated unilaterally by the government or by a government official of any stripe to be a state secret. And as a result, it allows the government to take any and all information and brush it under the rug in the name of protecting the country. Now, what makes this worse is there's two other aspects of this. One is if you leak a state secret, according to this new law, it's 10 years in prison. That's it.
Well, I better
if
be careful.
If you ask somebody to give information to you, you are literally instigating a crime, and that's 5 years in prison. And,
do you have any state secrets for me?
Yeah, right. That's it. Boom, you're both in prison. The disturbing part about this is, I mean, if that's not disturbing enough, the government has said, oh, we're not stopping investigative journalism. Of course, that's important. As long as you acquire that information through legal means. Now, the way this law is...
made the whole country Fox News.
Yeah. Well, but the way the law is written, obviously, you know, looking at it, it's like going, but you just got done saying there are no legal means. So when they wrote the law, they even made a very shallow attempt to appease protesters by saying, oh, don't worry, the law says right here, we should have an oversight committee. And they said, okay, so where is it? And I said, oh, no, well, we should. We didn't say we would. We said we should.
Well, didn't you know all journalists are terrorists?
Basically, right. And there was the most disturbing part about this was Abe's second in command, Mr. Ishiba. You know, he got riled up during the debate over this law, and I say debate loosely because it was basically rammed through within an incredibly short amount of time. It basically was like within 2 weeks they ran this law through.
It was like Patriot Act style, yeah.
Oh, it was terrible. I mean, a horrible, derailment of democracy, as it were. They ran the law through, and there were protesters outside the government. We're talking about, 1,000 people showed up and said this law is terrible. Absolutely not.
That's a big deal too, because a lot of people in Japan are apolitical or apathetic.
Yeah,
or there to be any protest at all. This isn't like France or something. It's a big deal to get people in the street.
Yeah, having 1,000 people show up is a big deal. And this Mr. Ishiba gets riled up and actually posts on his blog and says, if you are going out in public and loudly raising your voice to disturb the public harmony, that is the equivalent of terrorism. And within a few hours, he had to rescind that, saying, now, I'm not actually saying that, citizens who are just protesting are terrorists. I'm just saying, he's stuck his foot in his mouth at least twice in very telling and like, oh, really kind of ways. The first one by saying that, people who protest against the government are terrorists. And then secondly, saying, I'm not saying that, we're killing journalism. I'm just saying is that you can only, get information in legal ways. Otherwise, we'll throw you in prison. So very thinly veiled threats. And this Ishiba is obviously
dancing with John Bolton.
He's obviously dancing with glee. This guy, is Abe's worst enemy. And ironically, like his right hand man, because he's just basically champing at the bit saying, yes, we finally got this passed.
He just has the audacity to say stuff like that because he thinks it doesn't matter. And it's
the thing. He's like going, oh, wait, is this thing on? Oh, crap. He doesn't assume that anybody's actually reading it. So,
he's like Yeltsin, who was a career drunk and would say the best things ever sometimes, but with brutal honesty.
Japanese politicians are to me just particularly fascinating because they seem to operate under the notion that nobody's actually aware of what they're getting away with until they basically get caught with their pants down and then
they seem to live in another universe.
We're done, right?
They don't know what's going on at all, and they say the most outlandish, xenophobic, and racist, and just terrible things. Like, whoa, that's that's ordinary because all they ever do is talk to each other.
Well, exactly, it's the echo chamber problem, right? I mean, actually,
they're surrounded by yes men. That's Japanese society.
Yeah. It's a good society, but as far as the way that the laws work here, it's rather fascinating. I think a lot of the laws get passed to appease appease Japan's Western allies, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they will pass a law, even like this one, that seems, it is fairly draconian. But the problem is that they are very selective in their application of that law, their enforcement of it. So you'll end up having a law like this where it's written very broadly and very loosely, and 99% of the time it may seem like, oh, business as usual, until the time that they decide to take, say, 10 journalists and throw them all in jail and say, we'll see, because they broke the public harmony and they were acquiring information by illegal means. And this does go back to the original thought police problem.
Well, at least it's not done in secret and thrown in Gitmo like the level we have.
Well, yeah, but the
torture death. But
and again, Japan in the past has been criticized for attempting to pass laws. Like there is now a new policy of photographing and fingerprinting foreigners as they enter Japan, which for years was shouted down that they were even going to attempt it as being going against civil rights. But the new system has been implemented, and it was in answer to the United States deciding to do that particular thing after 9/11. And the United States said, we're justifying it by 9/11. And the Japan said, well, but we're your friends. Japan's like going, screw you. You're all equally foreign. We're going to photograph you and fingerprint you. And Japan said, see, we've been saying this for years. And then they immediately implemented it.
Yeah, they had the clout to do. Well, they have the new teacher program, which excludes foreigners from teaching English.
Right.
Which
oh,
think,
yeah.
If anybody would know English, it would be people from English-speaking countries, but they completely unconstitutionally have implemented this.
Yeah, that's one of those unofficial official laws, which is also a fun one. They call it the National Clause. And it was an idea that came up in 1953 where they basically said, foreigners cannot be hired for government positions if it's an administrative
AKA Chinese people.
Well, it was targeted towards
it was
Koreans with permanent visas or permanent residency, and specifically they thought, well, they could be, for example, allied with North Korea, so they ended up implementing. But the problem is that they never ratified it. It was implemented in 1953. It's never been ratified as a law, but the people of Japan in public positions actually treat it as if it is law. But the problem is that it's not, and it's in direct violation of Japanese Constitution Article 14, which says you cannot discriminate by race, creed, etc.
And it's just ridiculous. Why would you have an English program and exclude foreigners?
I mean, yeah, we want you to be a native speaker. You do not have to have teaching credentials or a degree in education, and you can't be foreign. It's like, really?
Yeah, good luck with that. But yeah, it's $74,000
a year, double the average salary of a credited, licensed Japanese teacher. And basically, yeah, it's not even a publicly sponsored cram school for kids who want to pass a test that they don't actually even want to take in the first place.
A specific test. So we got one more break, and then we'll get into the reaction to the secrecy law.
Okay.
Hey, welcome back. This is Ryan Dawson. I'm subbing for Mike Rivero. The number to call in is 800-313-9443. If you have a question about Japan or anything, I decided to use the last hour to go over some scandals in Japan because, after all, I live here. I have a unique insight into it, and why not go ahead and use that advantage? And we are talking about a bunch of different scandals in Japan. Just recently, the ridiculous teaching policy for this ridiculous test and the educational system, but I want to steer things back towards the state secrecy law. What has been the reaction to this since it did pass?
Well, the ever-important public approval rating has finally plummeted below 50%. Japan over the last few years has gone through a whole list of prime ministers. It's been a clown-like revolving door.
It's been like Italy.
We went through like two in 1 year at one point, and Mr. Abe is actually coming back for a second time, which is actually itself.
He had four different finance ministers too.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So anyway, kind of noteworthy that he's coming back a second time, and he was already, he was bad enough the first time. He got kicked out again based on approval ratings, because of his very revisionist policies and just lack of popularity. And for some reason, he's popular now only by dint of not being as bad as his predecessor.
Well, his predecessor was dealing with Fukushima.
Right, and also not to mention the fact that dealing with... Now, the Mr. Abe's party is a liberal democratic party, and they've been in power pretty much uninterrupted for 50 years. So the
53 and 55, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, so the DPJ, the Democratic Party of Japan, yeah, I don't know why they're both democratic, but they end up... they end up coming in and promising.
These names mean nothing, by the way. It says Democratic or Liberal, whatever.
Yeah, well,
they're both conservative groups.
This case is really an ironic appellation. Yeah. So anyway, the DPJ jumps in and says, we're going to fix things because this other party's been, screwing around for 55 years, and we're going to make things better. And they literally were given Fukushima handed in their lap and about 3 years to do something. And of course, inertia, basically made that impossible. So the people immediately jumped ship and said, no, we'll go back to these old guys completely, without any real, concrete reason. But here we are. So anyway, they are now passing this anti-secrecy law, which, among other things, allows them to be able to conveniently say, disasters like Fukushima, yeah, that's a state secret. So we can't really talk about that. And that's been...
They would love for people to shut up about that, too.
Oh, absolutely, because the Fukushima has been a nonstop, you know, disaster, a comedy of errors as far as how the government and how TEPCO, the power company, has continually managed to do exactly the opposite of what common sense would seem to dictate.
Oh, from top to bottom, they've botched that. But we got a caller from Florida. Steve, do you have a question or a comment?
Yeah. Hello, Ry. Let's see. I was wondering if you could comment on, a lot of people want to donate. I wanted to donate myself, and I figured, well, to you and or Mike, figured, well, I'll wait till I get $50 at least, you know. But can you explain why even like a $2 donation makes
a
difference
to you?
Well,
in mass, you know, there are tens of thousands of listeners, and I was saying for the RBN drive, if they... Yeah, I know people are hurting. I mean, the economy in the U.S. is hard, but if you could even give $1, that could be $10,000 to $20,000. Of course, if you have $50 to give, that's 50 times better. But it was just an idea I had for people to say, well, I just don't have any money, and I just don't think my $1 is going to matter. Is it even worth the headache of doing it? And I think it would be if everyone did it. That's all I was saying.
Right.
But if you'd like to donate, you can go to RBN's site to donate to them. If you want to donate to me, my site is ancreport.com, and there's a little PayPal button there.
Right. Somebody wrote, I think, on your site that, well, they were making minimum wage and living with all these people, and, I mean, the financial hardship that they were going through, and it was like, well, I don't mean to insult you, but I'm going to send you $2. And I mean, $2 from somebody like that is almost like $1,000. And you know that they support you.
Yeah, I think, you know, if I've had people come on my site that I've helped gather donations for. I'm usually fundraising for other people. You know, the economy in the U.S. has been hit so hard, and, I'd like to help everyone I can, but I don't have the means. But I think there's nothing shameful about sending $1 or $2 or accepting $1 or $2. It's, you know.
And you wouldn't be insulted by it.
I wouldn't be insulted by it at all. And I've given $2 donations to people before, out of the principle of it, to say I'm there, I'm supporting you, I just don't have a lot to give. You know, I think it's absolutely fine to do something like that.
Sure. Okay, well, thank you very much, Ryan. Good show.
Well, thank you, and thank you for your support for both networks. All right. Well, that was nice. Well, I'm getting back.
That was nice, yeah. No, I want to say, you know, if a music artist isn't insulted by paying for $1 for their song on iTunes, I don't see why anybody should feel insulted by...
Again, yeah, you know, 99 cents for a song.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
You know, it all adds up, and it all helps to, you know, sponsor and pay for this kind of service. So
that's how you get independent media. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So going back to the secrecy law, let's you know, I can see that, you know, we're coming down on the hour. So
yeah, about
I'll
5 minutes.
Try to sum this up, right? So basically, here's the problem. You got, I mean, obviously, it's a lot. It's a big problem. But to the short version is, so the LDP manages to get basically a majority in the Japanese Diet.
The Congress, yeah.
Right? Yeah, and they end up ramming through this law. I mean, it was breathtaking how fast and how hard they did this. As far as, again, total breach of democracy. In other words, you know, it's one thing to say the majority is representative. That's easy and fine, but they completely ignored the minority. And in this case, ironically, the minority being the Japanese people, but they ran the law through. The minority parties even walked out saying, you know, we're protesting this. We're not even going to be here to vote because it doesn't matter anyway. And the majority party's like, yeah, fine, go ahead, leave it, cool. And they rammed it through. They did a legally required public debate, which was done like the day before. Like literally they gave one day notice. We're doing a public debate tomorrow. 30 people show up. They limited the debate to like 30 minutes and said, yep, we're done. And the very next day, they went ahead and went to the upper house of the Diet and finished passing the law. And that was
a lot like the hearing 2 days ago about staying in Afghanistan another 5 years. It was just a circus.
It was totally.
How's the reaction from the people been? I mean, it's like 80%, 90%.
Oh my goodness! Yeah, so they're saying So Abe's approval rating has now dropped below 50%. You're getting a lot of academics speaking out. A few writers. The problem, the major problem, is we're hearing this a lot in the English-speaking press, but not a lot in the Japanese-speaking press because the reporters are now scratching their heads, going, can I say something without getting either kicked out of the press club or the government immediately starting to flex its muscles saying, I don't know, that sounds a lot like you're abusing the law. Because here's the penalty. The penalty is 10 years for leaking information, but even worse is 5 years for attempting to acquire information by, quote-unquote, illegal means. And that's the only definition they give, illegal means. They don't lay out criteria for what is illegal. So the government has free rein to say, you know what, that was illegal. Because by basically saying any divulgence of information is illegal, they leave themselves free rein to say, oh, that was illegal at any time they choose. And
that's the Japanese prison too, and that's not like watching TV and lifting weights.
No, it's not pleasant. Japanese police can... Now, this would be more of a political bent, but, you know, even on a good day, the Japanese police have the right to hold you for 33 days without grounds.
Yeah.
And they're infamous for finding ways to get people to confess to things that they may not have necessarily done. So it's not a pleasant experience.
Well, here comes the music, but thanks for shedding light on all that. I think we got a little bit of everything, a taste in the mouth there of all these subjects, which could all be delved in more deeply. Thank you very much, everybody, for listening. This is Ryan Dawson. That was my last day substituting for Mike Rivero. You can check out my own work on ancreport.com and see you all over on whatreallyhappened.com. All the best. Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, holidays. Take care, everybody.